We're doing Parshat Vayigash. So in the end of last week's parsha, we had deja vu. The brothers find themselves again being searched. Years ago, Lavan ran up and searched everyone's bags. And now again, someone's running up and searching all of their bags. Years ago, someone made a critical error. Yaakov said, whoever you catch with the stolen item will die. And with that, he basically declared that Rachel would die in heaven. And now the brothers make a similar declaration. They say, whoever you find the missing goblet by should die. So, Sofnas Paneach, Yosef has been playing games with their emotions. The first time they come, you guys are a bunch of spies. He throws them into prison for 3 days. Then he says, you know, I can't do this, gentlemen. You have families. I'm scared of God. I'm going to send you home. And he just shoves Shimon into the pit. Shimon was the one who threw him into the pit and threw rocks after him. So he shoves Shimon into the pit opposite them. He says, I'm holding on to one of you. And the rest of you, go home in peace. Everything's okay. And the brothers fail test number one. They say, well, he has a good argument. We'll leave Shimon in the pit. So for a good argument, they turn their back on Shimon. They're going back home. So things seem okay. The ruler has some kind of claim, but we'll answer his claim. We'll bring back Benjamin. But when they come home, so after they've left with this feeling like it'll all be okay, suddenly the money's back in their bags. And so Yosef has played with their emotions a second time. Now they're all worried. Yaakov says, what'd you guys do to me? Why'd you have to tell him there's another brother? But we didn't know, the brothers say. We didn't know. And Yaakov says, I'm not sending the other brother with you. Look what you did. I sent Yosef to you and he's gone. I sent Shimon with you and he's gone. Now I want to take the last one I have from Rachel. Hey, I'm the one that's suffering. Reuven says, you could kill my kids. If you think this is the game, you could kill my kids. Well, Yaakov says, forget you. Yehuda comes in and says, I'm willing to give up my portion in the world to come. There's no more food left. We could have been there and back. Just let me go with Benjamin. They come with Benjamin, and they're all nervous with the money. Yosef's been playing with them. And when they walk in, Yosef, second in command, runs in and summons them to Yosef's palace. So the first thing they think is, oh no, it's all because of that money. They're going to claim we robbed the palace. They say, sir, wait, we brought money. It's not, we didn't steal anything. And he says, don't worry about a thing. You guys are all paid up. Everything's perfect. Just get ready. Yosef wants to invite you all for lunch. They come in. They bring a kosher shochet. They show them the meat is slaughtered kosher. They bring the best wines. Everyone eats. Everyone drinks. It's a festive atmosphere. Yosef is joking with them. For the first time in 22 years, they're getting drunk. Everyone drinks. Boy, Yosef took them from a place. Now he brings out Shimon. He's such a nice guy. He lets them all eat. He even takes Benjamin and has him sit by his table. And then when they leave, Yosef says, guys, after everything you've been through, you take your money back. You're getting this journey's food. You're getting for free. He gives them the money back, loads their bags with food, sends them off. Wow, what a nice ruler. They're halfway out, and suddenly the horses come charging after them. The Egyptian army is there, and they're being yelled at. And they play a game. Why have you paid back our good treatment with such an evil act? And they search, but they're going to search from the eldest to the youngest. And every time they open a sack, the brothers are like, yeah, was there a goblet there? Right, you think we'd steal from you? We'd steal from you? Come on, we brought you back money that you think we paid. Look at what honest people we are. And then they hit the bottom of Benjamin's sack. And again, notice how Yosef is playing with their emotions. They get to the bottom of Benjamin's sack, and out comes the goblet. You were sitting next to the king. I should have known you were the one who took the goblet. You were the one sitting at his table. And what do the brothers do? One by one, they come and give Benjamin a whack. You thief, the son of a thief. Your mother stole? Last time we were all being searched, it was your mother who stole? Now we get searched again? We should have known. Now we're in trouble. And Benjamin is silent. Every brother tears his clothing. And they're taken back to Egypt. And here our parsha begins. They're standing in Egypt. They've been brought before Yosef. And Yosef is standing there. He says, what'd you guys do? Didn't you know I'd figure this out? You think I'm not smart without my goblet? I know I always use my goblet to figure out all the sorcery, but come on, you don't think I'm smart enough to figure that out? And so Yehuda steps forward and he throws himself down before Yosef. And Yehuda is going to use two tactics. And these alternating tactics are the tactics the Jewish people have used in different times. One is to be nice, let's be friends. The other is to fight. So he's going to beg. He says, you know, the child is the favorite. He's the youngest. Our father's so old. Look at how poor we are. We came here for food. And the truth is that by arousing Yosef's mercy, Yehuda succeeds. Yosef did not yet intend to reveal himself. But what is Yosef doing with this game? Yosef is sharpening and developing. He's bringing them to a breaking point where they're going to have to say, are we willing to risk our lives for Yosef? Their grandfather Avram, when his cousin Lot was captured at war, went to war and said, either I'll kill or I'll be killed, but I will not let my cousin sit in captivity. And they turned on Yosef and sold him, their own brother. And Yosef says, we're holding at the threshold of a great exile. The future of the Jewish people begins with us. We must rectify what happened 22 years ago, and the only way to rectify it is for the brothers to step up to the plate and say no. And so Yosef is pushing them. And he's pushing them a little bit more and a little bit more. And he wants to bring them to the point where they're going to say, no, we can't let go of one brother. And what does Yosef do? In Shimon's case, he has a legitimate claim. He's only holding him in captivity till they come back. They agreed. Now in Benjamin's case, he's taking him to be a servant. What do the brothers suspect? They say, Yosef, why did you take the littlest one? There's a game going on here. It's because of his good looks. You took him for prostitution. Yosef's thinking, new guys, and what did you guys do to me? What were you doing to me when you sold me out to Egypt? Ah, but now the brothers are ready to fight. So they're going to an argument. And and give me 1 second, I'm sorry. Our sages say that when Yehuda would get upset, he would let out a roar. And his roar could be heard from miles away. The Medrash says Yehuda would take lead and start chewing it, and it would drip along the side of his mouth. And he'd have one eye that would turn bloody and drip in blood. And the Medrash says that when Yehuda would yell, so even Pharaoh's soldiers all stood back. They got scared. And Yosef said, yeah, but I'm not. And he says to Yehuda, let's have a talk, you and I. And they go for a walk. And Yehuda says to Yosef, he says, I sense that, what am I going to tell Dad? So he says, tell Dad that when you drop a bucket in a well, so then not only the bucket falls into the well, but the rope goes after the bucket. Just like his mother stole and she died for it, so too he stole, and you know what? The rope went after the bucket down the well. You're very sorry. He stole. He's paying the price. Yehuda says, you know, I feel like you're coming to me with an unjust case. I don't think there's justice in your case in what you're arguing here. And Yosef says, and I don't think you guys had justice when you sold your brothers. I don't think there was anything more unjust than that. Yehuda says, a fire's burning within me and I'm ready to destroy you. I'm going to open my mouth and devour you. Yosef says, you open that mouth, I'm going to put a rock in it. You're not going to devour me. Yehuda says, I feel the fire burning in me. I'm going to draw out a sword and after I unsheathe my sword, I won't put it back in my sheath until I've destroyed you and all of Egypt. And Yosef says, you draw that sword, I'm wrapping it around your neck. You're not drawing that sword on me. Yehuda says, there's a fire burning within me. Yosef says, yeah, that's the same fire that burnt when you saw that beautiful woman on the side of the road. What Yehuda was really saying is, you know, we killed the city of Shechem because they violated our sister. We get the feeling you intend to violate our brother. Yosef says to him, that's very nice that you have such a feeling, but you can't trust your feelings, Yehuda. Because what I've heard about you is that you, with all due respect, went with a woman of ill repute. So what fire is burning within you? You know. Yosef answers Yehuda. Yehuda says, we're going to paint the markets of Egypt with blood. Yosef says to him, you guys are really good painters. I know you painted your brother's garment with blood and sent it to your father. You're still busy painting, huh? 22 years later, Yehuda. Notice how he's driving home the point. Yehuda starts getting upset. He says, we're going to destroy Egypt. Yosef says to Yehuda, it doesn't exactly work that way. Egypt is not Shechem. You guys were able to destroy Shechem and nothing happened to the world. But right now there's a famine. You destroy Egypt, there'll be no world. The world is counting on us and our wisdom to stay alive. You can't destroy Egypt. And if you do destroy Egypt, you're destroying yourself. No one's been able to hold on to their crops. Look around. Other people have tried storing it. Only we, with our wisdom, the system we've developed here, the crops are lasting. And there's a long time this famine's still going to last. You can't destroy Egypt, Yehuda. Yehuda says to the brothers, I want you to take a count. I want you to see how many marketplaces there are in Egypt. And then we're going to go and start destroying the Egyptian marketplaces. When Yosef senses, Yehuda says, what am I going to tell my father? Yosef says, why didn't you think about that when you sold your other brother? What did you tell him then? Again, Yosef is cornering them. Chazal say, Yosef sensed that he had brought them to the breaking point, where they were ready to kill him and ready to go on all-out war against the rest of Egypt. And at that point, Yosef says to them, you know what? Before we continue this argument, why don't I bring the brother you've been looking for? You guys say you came to Egypt looking for that brother. Let me bring him to you. And the brothers stand in stunned silence. You know where he is? Yosef says, yeah, I do. And I'll bring him. And he holds the brothers at bay. He removes everyone from the room. And here we have to notice again how Yosef is sensitive. Sometimes we're so interested in other people hearing us say, I am right. Yosef isn't interested in that. And so Yosef has everyone leave the room. The doors are locked. And Yosef says, let me call that Yosef, that brother that you guys sold as a servant here. I'll call him into the room. And he turns to his left and he goes, Yosef, Yosef, your brothers are here. Come meet them. Yosef, everyone's waiting. And the brothers are all looking to the left and the door is closed and no one's coming in. And he calls again. He says, Yosef, no, everyone's waiting. Come on in. The brothers are looking in anticipation, nothing happening. He waits. And then he turns to the door on the right. And then he says, Yosef, why don't you come already? They're all waiting. So the brothers all turn to the door on the right and they're waiting. Yosef, we're all waiting. Come on in. Nothing doing. He goes to the back of the room. There's another door. He calls to that door, and he takes him in every direction of the room, calling Yosef, Yosef, and they're standing there quiet, until finally Yosef says, don't you guys realize I am Yosef? And the brothers all back away. Now suddenly the room isn't big enough. Until now they kept approaching each door, expecting a humble servant. Who knows what Yosef's going to look like after 22 years? Instead they see this fierce ruler who's been playing with them until now. And now the mask is off. He suddenly takes off the coverings off his face. And he looks at them. And he's standing there with a beard, a grown man. They all walk back and they're stunned. And they have nothing to say. And our sages say, Oy lanu miyom adin, oy lanu miyom atochecha. Woe to us from that day of judgment. Woe to us from that day of proof. Because the day will come when every one of us has to face up to our own hypocrisy. What Yosef was showing the brothers was their hypocrisy. Where were these feelings 22 years ago? Why do you think it's fair to fight now? But what Yosef is trying to bring out from within them is the declaration, we were wrong 22 years ago. What Yosef wants them to say is, you're right. We should have fought for Yosef 22 years ago as well. There's a discussion among our sages whether the brothers ever did a proper tshuva. You'll notice that as much as Yosef corners them and pushes them, we don't hear that sentence. Nor in the Midrashim do we hear that sentence. I'm not aware of any Midrash that says that the brothers reached a point and said to Yosef, you know we were wrong. So you could argue it was a personal internal issue, but it wasn't anymore. It was part of the argument. Yosef was saying, look at you. You did it before, so let it happen again. This time it's not your fault. So on the one end, they're fighting for Benjamin. On the other end, they never come out and say, you know, we were wrong. Nor do they do it at the end of their lives. In next week's parasha, the brothers don't really apologize to Yosef. They come and say, we're your servants. They come and say, your father said just before he died, we should ask you to forgive us. But they never say, you know, we were wrong, please forgive us. That we don't hear. And that's why there's a discussion among the commentaries whether the brothers ever did a complete tshuva for what they did to Yosef. Our sages say, after we pass away, there's a day of reckoning. Every person's going to be judged. But the difficulty with the judgment is that God will show us our own contradictions. Here we said, this is so important to us, and we did so many things on behalf of that, and there we did the exact opposite. The classical example, a guy walks out of shul, he doesn't wait for davening to end because he must go and deal with something. He has an appointment, he has a bus to catch, and then suddenly a sign catches his eye, an email, a telephone call, and for something frivolous, he's going to detain himself 5-10 minutes and suddenly he has the time. Wait a second, buddy. You were in such a rush, it was legitimate to leave shul early, right? But then out come for something else, you stuck around. Those contradictions in our own lives, where we each are hypocrites, we are. The question is to what degree? So we strive, we try, but in fact, that's Yom HaTochecha. Our sages say, just as Yosef's brothers were stunned into silence, and they all backed off because here they were shown that embarrassment of their being wrong, that's going to happen to every one of us. Scary thought. You know what the Zohar says? I don't learn Zohar, but it's quoted. That the one who's going to judge us in Judgment Day is our wife. Who said our wife? Yes. Right. Yes. So, Yosef beckons them. He says, Gishuna Eli. Please approach me. Notice what Yosef is asking them. I want you back. Gishuna Eli. You know what Chazal say Yosef asked them in that first meeting? He said, promise me that you will never tell our father what happened. Chazal say his first request of the brothers was, Abba must never know what happened. Promise me you'll never tell. And so if Yosef's mistake, and he had 22 years to think about that mistake, was the way he put down his brothers. He kept telling his father what they did wrong. Now when he meets up with them a second time, he does the exact opposite. He says, I don't want Dad to look down at you guys. Promise me you're never going to tell. Our sages say that Yosef watched himself till the day Yaakov died, never to be alone with Yaakov. Yosef ensured from that day that Yaakov came to Egypt, till the day Yaakov died, that there would always be people present. And that's why he sets up Yaakov in Goshen, and he stays in the capital. So that they'd never have a chance to have a private conversation where Yaakov could say, Yosef, where you been for 22 years? What's transpired? How did all this happen? Yosef doesn't want Yaakov to know. He does not want Yaakov to look down at his brothers. Yosef sends his father wagons to bring him down to Egypt. And our sages say the last lesson that Yaakov taught Yosef was the importance of accompanying someone. You don't let a person go alone. Abraham walked his guests. It says the angels visited him. Abraham v'Avraham olech imam l'shalechan. Abraham walked with him. And Yaakov told Yosef, you accompany someone. You know, Rav Hyman told me that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was considered the great Rosh Yeshiva in the United States after the war, when he would have a visitor, he would walk out the visitor, and then he'd stand and wave. Why did he stand and wave? Because you add those 10 seconds and you give the person the feeling, I was happy you came and I wish you wouldn't have left. How often do we turn around as the car is turning around and pulling off? We're rushing back to deal with all those things we've been postponing all the time we've been hosting this guest. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said that's the point of Livaya. When you walk out a guest, you're telling them, it was great to have you and I want to extend it. I'm going to walk with you. I'm adding that flavor. And sometimes that little addition of flavor makes all the difference of how a person feels. The law in Egypt was that you couldn't take out from the Egyptian cattle outside Egypt. They would cut out the cattle's wombs so that you couldn't take them out. They wanted to ensure that no one else would be able to breed animals like the Egyptian cattle. So if a cow would leave Egypt, they'd cut out its womb, so they'd do some kind of operation, so you could never breed Egyptian cattle outside Egypt to ensure there'd be no competition. Yosef wouldn't do that. And that's why he got special permission from Pharaoh to send natural cattle up to Yaakov to bring Yaakov back down to Egypt. So Yaakov enters shock and he offers sacrifices before he goes to Chutz Laaretz. Perhaps this is the source for the custom that people go to the Kotel before they fly out of Israel. It's as though I'm saying goodbye. Before I go, many people go to the Kotel. Rabbi Magnus told me once that he was visiting the United States and he was in, maybe it's not nice to say where, a big Jewish metropolis, and a Jew met him there and he said to him, when are you guys coming to Israel? And the Jew says to him, what are we lacking here? Look at how many shuls we have. Look at how many educational institutions we have. Look at how much kosher food we have. We have everything here. And so Rabbi Magnus said to him, you know, there's something you don't have here. He says, yeah, what are we missing? He says, before I got on the plane to come here, I went to the Kotel. You don't have that here. And the guy blushed. The guy realized that's not the approach. It's not just a question of, do I have shuls? Do I have education? Yaakov, before he leaves Israel, he realizes where he's going. He realizes he's going to Chutz Laaretz. He goes to offer sacrifices before he leaves. And here we begin the exile. The exile which began with the hatred, the enmity between the brothers. And here Yosef is stressing to them the concept of achdus, unity. They go down to Egypt just like Abraham went down to Egypt. They go down to the land of Ham, which is the exact opposite of Avraham. Avraham is blessed, Ham is cursed. The Galut began with the second son, with Yitzchak, and the Galut is in the land of Mitzrayim, who is the second son of Ham. At the end of the parasha, Yosef ensures that the priests are protected. Why does he give protection to the Egyptian priests? One Medrash says that when Potiphar's wife made claims against him, they brought him to court, and the judges were Egyptian priests, and they brought their forensic, their scientists, and they checked the garment, and they said the strands on the back of the garment are taut, they are worn, and that shows that his version of the story is true, that he wasn't making advances, he was trying to run away, and she was pulling him, and because he pulled his neck back against the back of the garment, that's why the frays on the garment are on the back. If her version were true, he was making advancements and she was pushing him away with the garment, then the front should have been frayed. And so the Egyptian priests gave an honest ruling. And they said, Yosef's version is true, Potiphar. We're sorry to tell you. Potiphar said, well, I'm not going to tell anyone that. I'll give him royal treatment. I'll put him in a royal prison. So that's why Yosef pays them back. He gives them tax-free land. The second understanding is that Yosef wanted to ensure that the Jewish priests the Levites, anyone who would want to be learned in Torah, would have a tax-free existence. And that's why he instituted this law, so that would preempt the period of servitude in Egypt with a protective clause for those who would educate and hold on to the morale of the Jewish people.